You're listening to Practical Defense with Alex Haddix.
Welcome to the Practical Defense Podcast, where you'll learn practical approaches to staying safe in our increasingly dangerous urban environments. I'm your host, Alex Haddix, and this is episode 209, Kevlar with Doc Wesson, Part 2. This week, we conclude our discussion with Doc Wesson on the subject of Kevlar vests. Doc is a PhD chemist and works in the development and application of Kevlar for both civilians and the military. We pick up right where we left off in the episode 207, so there's no introduction. This part of the discussion focuses on the manufacturing process and the care and maintenance of Kevlar vests. I have a wicked flu this week, so that's it for the chit-chat. Hang tight, and we'll be right back with Doc Wesson and Kevlar.
The legal aftermath of using a gun in self-defense can be traumatic and expensive. Get help and peace of mind through the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. Network members receive much-needed financial and legal support right after a self-defense incident. They also receive education in the form of DVDs from some of the top names in the business, along with having access to a nationwide pool of attorneys. Learn about membership at www.armedcitizensnetwork.org.
We've talked about the fibers. We've talked about how they're created. We've talked about layering and the threat levels. Now let's look to the manufacturing process and care and maintenance. And because these are not the types of things that you can just throw in the wash.
Right.
There are common environments that will compromise the integrity of these things.
So, most definitely.
So let's talk about that.
Kevlar or para-aramids, that type of fiber, basically any of those high-strength fibers are really not – you don't want to have them in the light and you don't want to have them wet. That's if you look, you alluded to a little earlier when they go to produce these vests, they actually take the Kevlar, lay it out if they stitch it the way they stitch it, but they encapsulate that or put it in what we call the bag or, it's that bag is typically going to be like a certain amount of waterproof. And obviously dark so that light does not get to it because ultraviolet light plays havoc on that particular type of chemistry as well as moisture. And so one of the things like we do is to put a water repellent actually on the fiber itself to keep the moisture off of it. And Kevlar wicks like nobody's business. So that's one of the reasons why it has to be a really good water repellent and really truly encapsulated in a bag because, it wicks so bad, any moisture that reaches the edge of it would suck right into the fabric. And so then all of a sudden you've got all those forces breaking down that chemistry and therein also breaking down the strength of the entire fabric at that point. So, yes, that's exactly right. Kevlar itself, you're looking, I want to say, and I can't speak totally because I don't know what each vest manufacturer likes to come out with, but I'd say on the average, like about 10 years, I think. I see a lot of vests that are, I think, coming off of the, out of use, like before 10 years. I think that's probably a good thing. But you're looking at real true degradation. Being around it, 10 years is going to be pretty rough on it at that point. So the key is, though, to keep it dry and to keep it out of the sun as much as possible. So, and they do that. It's not anything special that you do, like, wear it under your shirt. It's the way they do it when they actually produce the vest itself.
So if the outer layer or the bag is cut in an attack, then the vest is...
Time to get a new. Yeah, exactly right. That's a perfect example. Or if it's shot as well, I would. Yeah, you're breaking the you're breaking that protective bag outside. There's going to be a big difference there. Yeah. It's at that point your environment gets entered into the system and the forces start at work. Now it doesn't mean like 2 weeks from now. If it's cut, it's not going to be good anymore. But and you know, there I'm certain that there are some repair, like the companies that actually produce it and sell it probably have some type of repair system to where they actually could come back possibly and rebag it or, you know, whatever. But you're right. That's a good point.
But I mean, that's kind of the whole point of the device is, wow, this thing just stopped a knife from going into my kidney. Woo-hoo, it did its job. Thank you. I would spend $400 to prevent that any day of the week.
You got it.
And now it's time to put that one away, say, thank you very much, and where's my new one?
That's right.
So it's not like, oh my God, it's ruined. It's like, it's more like, thank God, it just saved my life.
Right.
And it's time to recycle it. It's like motorcycle helmets. And I had some friends in high school that rode motorcycles, and you know, you have a bad crash and you replace that helmet because that helmet's now compromised, you know?
Right.
It's not going to protect your coconut twice.
That's right. That's true. Now, you know, of course, you know, with a shiv or ice pick, I don't know. There's a lot of, not really a lot of surface area there. They probably can use that over. And I don't really know how, you know, and again, that's going to be the manufacturer making the claims on that. And that's obviously something I can't do. But I can just say, once you introduce the elements into it, then the forces begin to work on it. So, yeah, you want to keep the moisture out of it, and you want to keep it out of the sunlight because the ultraviolet light really does beat it up pretty bad.
Now, what about ambient temperatures, like leaving it in the trunk of your car after when you go off duty? Because I could see people, you know, private security, you know, man, this thing is hot and heavy and sweaty. It's uncomfortable. And the first thing you want to do is when you're off shift is you want to take it and you want to toss it in your car.
Mm-hmm.
It's hot in California.
Right.
You know, well, outside temperature gets 120. It can hit 200 inside your car. Mm-hmm. Is that a problem for the fibers?
I would want to keep it in more of an ambient type temperature. I know that a lot of people do that. And honestly, yeah, you know, I can tell you that heat, of course, is energy, and that does start to cause issues to break down, which, of course, is probably one of the reasons that the vest manufacturers put certain dates on their vests as well. But I would want to keep it in more of an ambient, you know, livable type temperature, so to speak. Now, does that mean you're wearing it in it's 110 degrees outside? No, wear it. I mean, you know, but like you say, and that makes sense that folks would be slamming it in the trunk of their car. You know, they're coming off duty or leaving their job and you know, sticking it in there. But, it, you know, just my personal thing. And again, I don't do this. So, but I would want to keep it more of an ambient temperature because, you know, again, heat is energy, and it, any type of energy like that is going to start eventually. It won't be as bad, I don't think, as the sunlight or the, moisture working on it. But, and again, I can't make any claims. I got to throw that caveat in again, because I don't want us getting sued. it's not, again, it just depends on all of the forces put together in it. But it is energy. I would definitely try to keep it happy.
Cool. Now, I guess the shell that goes around it really is outside of kind of your purview because of you work more on the chemical side and provide raw materials, and then the actual manufacturer then does the assembly part.
Right.
Let's talk about some famous failures.
Oh.
There was a company, and it's made the news, that was shipping out faulty gear to the troops. And it turned out that this company was also providing the vests to the president.
Sure was.
So let's go into detail on that one.
Yeah. Well, what you're referring to, there's a company that was out there called Second Chance. And I can't remember. I want to say it's like, what, 2006, maybe sometime in that time frame.
Yeah, it was a few years ago.
And it had there was a pro. It's another, you know, high strength fiber called PBO. And it's polybifenimer. I won't bore everybody.
when the guy that can pilot high and deep starts fumbling around, you know it's a
listen,
big word.
It's a big word. PBO stands for something. I can tell if you want me to, but it's really the trade name for this particular one is Xylon, and that's probably what you heard. PBO is actually a stronger fiber than Kevlar, and it's due to the molecular structure of it. But the problem is the way that, and this is as far as I know, I've never made it, but from what I've gleaned from the information, the way that material was made, there's leftover stuff on the fiber, on the fabric that once moisture gets to it, it causes basically what we call acid hydrolysis. And when that happens, it immediately starts degrading the fiber at a very, very rapid rate. And so, where you've had this stuff tested, once you've produced the vest or had it tested in the panels, works fantastic. And then, of course, you don it, you start wearing a vest, and the whole time you've got the force of moisture and other things that have gotten in there prior to you actually, encapsulating it to where it's just working away at it, and it eats it up at a very high rate. So from what I remember, Second Chance actually went out of business. I think what happened was they ended up going bankrupt, and it just ate them up, in essence.
They're back. I mean, I'm looking at the latest Gall's catalog, and Second Chance is in here.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Arma Holdings was the first one that pulled them back. That's right. That's exactly right. So they're, they're still in there. That's true. And basically
and
it wasn't
$1,200.
They make a good vest, huh?
Well, I don't know. I hope they make a good vest now.
Yeah. But I think Armor Holdings, I think, was the first one to produce the Xylon stuff. I can't remember. I'm reading something here. The rated lifespan warranty of the new vest at that time was from 60 to 30 months. They actually downgraded it tremendously because of the problem. That's, and that's a shame because that really is the fiber. I think Toyobo was actually, they're the ones making it. As the Toyobo Corporation is the one that produced it. And it really was a good fiber. It's just, it was susceptible to the moisture really rapidly. And yeah, you've got these things. And I think I'm just trying to remember just go by memory here. But I think that there was maybe an officer that had been shot, I want to say somewhere out in California, and it failed, and it wasn't that old a vest. And the guy was really seriously injured. And they went back and looked at why, this was not that old a vest. Why was it having the issues? And that's how it was discovered. But again, it's like chemistry at play. I mean, it really, and the chemistry along with energy or other forces. In this case, it was more like a moisture that created just the proper amount of wrong stuff on the fiber to cause it to start to degrade at an exponential rate.
Wow. Yeah, because, in computers, they assemble hard drives and things like that in clean rooms because bacteria can get into the oil that will eventually cause the hard drive to fail. So they actually have to go in completely, clean rooms to assemble these hard drives. And what I've seen, again, Discovery Channel is my experience, is they just have a bunch of people sitting on just a standard, textile assembly line, counting panels by hand, sewing them, throw them in a bag, doing their thing to seal the bag up and moving it down the line.
Yeah.
so I can see that maybe if the environment wasn't set up properly, if it was too hot or too moisture, could the sweat off the brow of the person do the assembly cause these types of problems?
Oh, absolutely. Seawater is one they call it. Well, that's, wet sweat. It's any type of salty moisture is really bad. Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. And I remember the PBO, I want to say they melted a jacket around the material. I want to say that. I don't remember actually seeing them produce it, but I remember hearing something of that nature. But they really tried to protect it. And once it's in there, it's already starting its job. So, yeah, absolutely. That's a wet sweat like that, seawater, ultraviolet light's bad with that as well. Visible light, of course, holds properties that cause to degrade as well. Now, PBO, they still make it, but they actually produce it for things like, belts, other industrial type things as well. I think at one point they were looking at, this is something funny, a space elevator where they actually were going to put it. You remember the ropes? Yeah, they were going to have a tether. And I think it was some place up in Canada, maybe is the one that was one. I forgot. But anyway, they were using Xylon fibers to use basically to stretch out this huge tether that would be from the ground to space. And then, of course, the spin of the Earth would keep it taut And then you actually have an elevator at that point that you would ride up and down on these fibers to space. So, you know, but that was, you know, one of the things they used was the PBO along with it. Now, there's other fibers out there. M5 was going to be a big one. M5, I don't know. I really don't know what happened to that. They had some other issues with that. I think it was in production as well. Couldn't get it consistent. At least that's what I'd heard. I can't, you know, speak 100% for it. That's one of the fibers we wanted to try to get as soon as it came out, but then so did everybody else. But M5 was going to be tremendously stronger, supposedly, than the Kevlar and the others as well. But, you know, there's gives and takes with each one of those. They can be, you know, you got to take care of them. They've got to. A lifespan, as you know, a shelf life, as we call it, as well. So very important to make sure you take care of your vest as if he's your best friend.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. But I mean, for civilian use, as mm-hmm. you know, Mass recommends, is just keeping it under your bed. And if something happens and you need to pull your firearm for self-defense or, you know, because of the stab qualities and the impact qualities, mm-hmm. you know, even if you go hand to hand, there's nothing wrong with wearing a little bit of armor.
No,
you know, because that it'll stop. It won't completely block blows, but, you know, from a baseball bat or something like that. But it certainly is going there, you know, just in your underwear or your pajamas.
Right.
So even if you don't have a firearm, it still may be a good thing to keep around.
I would say so. I know that, you know, and just another thing is, you know, if you're wearing one of these vests and you get shot, there's something else called back face deformation. And
yes, because I was going to go to that next. So,
oh, sorry.
No. It's perfect.
Good segue. So,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
So because it stops the bullet doesn't necessarily mean that it stops all the energy or it can still hit you like a mule kick
or kill you. I mean, it's still. Yeah, you're right. Now, you know, think of the as the vest, as the layers, the panels that you've got as a catcher's mitt. And as it catches. Just as if you were to watch slow motion of a catcher's mitt, you see as the ball enters the glove and hits the center, it actually deforms into the glove. Well, if you've ever caught somebody throwing a fast ball to you once or twice, you know it still hurts when it hits your hand if they throw it fast enough and you hit it right in the palm. Well, that's the same thing with these. You're going to feel it behind with the ballistic part. You're going to feel it behind, you know, in your body. It could break ribs. I mean, you know, there may be skin damage where it would break the skin. You know, maybe the force, I don't know. I'm sure that there's been instances where people have actually, you know, perished, unfortunately, due to it. I can't recall a number or anything like that. But again, it's not just, you know, you're standing behind this incredible shield that you just, you know, possibly walk away. I know in some movies, like Hollywood, they'll show you be shot and then they'll just get up and start running. You know? And maybe you can do that. I mean, you know, but you're going to feel it and there's going to be, you know, depending on, of course, what the threat level is and what you've got there. And it definitely, you know, there is a back face. And that's another thing that the NIJ is, well, not necessarily NIJ, but there's a test for, tests for is back face deformation as well. And they'll actually take these panels or these vests, put them up against clay. And when they shoot it, they measure the depth and the actual circumference and the radius and or diameter of the cavity into the clay so that they actually, you know, give you a reading on what type of, you know, deformation would happen behind it. And that is another thing that we are starting to work on, as well as other companies, is to try to minimize by actually entering another layer, perhaps, or some other type of treatments that will actually help stop that, you know, or lessen it. I don't think you'll ever stop it, but lessen it to a considerable amount. Now, with the stab vests, I think what they do in a lot of cases is to put like some type of rubber, you know, mat kind of material behind it. I can't speak of that totally, but that's the kind of thing that they do is to try to get something that will catch it a little bit more and spread that that force out.
So you actually mentioned when we were discussing previously that there's a new type of polymer out there that is coming out that is pretty interesting, and it takes care of some of the problems with Kevlar, although it's still Kevlar-based. Could you talk about that?
Yeah. DuPont has created what they call XP, and that's their trade name. And again, Kevlar is their registered name as well, too. People think Kevlar, and you know, the chemistry is a para-aramid, but Kevlar is registered trade name by DuPont. So you know, DuPont gets full credit for everything there. But basically, it's a fiber. These materials are not woven into a fabric. They're actually laid up unidirectional at various angles per ply. So you have, like if you were to say, and I'm not saying that this is what it is, but if you were to have a unidirectional, which what I mean is you just take those yarns and you lay them out flat in one direction, and there's no cross-direction yarn. It's all unidirectional. And then you take another of those layers and lay it at 90 degrees, for instance. Then you have...
So like plywood.
Yeah. Basically, you're crisscrossing. Now, they do it. It's done at various angles. I really don't know the true angles to them, but in a number of plies. So you get more strength with a unidirectional that way because you don't have what we talked about before, which is the knuckles when you actually weave a fabric. So, and you also don't have those interstices like you would. So it actually... The claim there, and Point Blank actually, I want to say, is one of the first ones that came out, if not the first one to come out with something that they could use. But it used the 100% Kevlar XP from DuPont and produced a material that pretty much was about 10% lighter than the other commercial materials that were available, i.e., you know, the woven stuff. So in a comparison with the NIJ level 3A, which is at the 44 Magnum, the 240 grain 44 Magnum, it also helped the back face signature, which is, we talked about back face deformation, up to about 15%, reduced it by about 15%. So, you know, those are some of the things that they were working on to really get better ballistics and reduce trauma as well from the back face. And so that is becoming more available now. We had mentioned a little bit about, you know, NIJ. The NIJ came out with a new standard. They raised the bar, so to speak. Some of the stuff we were talking about was from that. I want to say it was the new, I can't remember the number, but it's NIJ's 06 testing requirements. That really knocked a lot of the smaller mom and pop type shops out to where, you know, really it kept the big boys in because it was very expensive testing, very rigorous testing to try to get anything qualified at that point. So it really has, I guess, narrowed the field down, so to speak, to where you've got a lot of the reputable people still around, the big boys. I know DuPont at one point was actually willing to pay a certain amount of money. It was quite a bit, actually, for testing as long as you could get their Kevlar product into the product, like a 100%, I think it was, or maybe there was 80%, something like that. But the DuPont would come back and pay up to a certain amount of the testing. That's how expensive it got. So the bar was raised, and you know, which is a good thing. It's a good thing for the consumer due to the fact that, you know, you're getting something that's been more rigorously tested and also a higher standard to it. So it's considerable different these days. They're really taking, not that they didn't take it serious before, but it is very serious now. And one of the things like XP, the Kevlar that DuPont came out with was really geared towards stopping the threat but being more comfortable. And, you know, you're looking really at the law enforcement officer or even the civilian in that. Now, this stuff I don't think is going to be that cheap. It's fairly expensive. But, again, what price do you put on protection like that?
Well, I mean, if you're on a private security guard salary, it can be quite prohibitive.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's true. That's true. That's very true. But I don't know the quote on how much that is. Because I don't, you know, I've never, again, we don't produce it. I have to, we want to try to work with it some to see if there's some things we could do to help out with it. But again, that's some of the new things that are coming out now. The unidirectional materials and the new fibers that like DuPont, and DuPont really leads the way very well, I think. I have worked with them quite extensively. So,
yeah, well, with all things, you know, as time goes on, the technology increases and the cost to produce drop and mm-hmm. become far, you know, more common and more reliable. Mm-hmm. But and speaking of reliability, it really, you know, I just can't get over the fact that how important care and maintenance of the vests, how critical that plays into the integrity of the vest.
Yeah.
And the manufacturing process.
Oh, it really does.
I mean, you really, it sounds like you don't want to go with a fly-by-night manufacturer because there are so many different ways to introduce problems into the vest.
There really are. I mean, and again, it's especially looking at, you know, the importance of what this product is supposed to do. You know, it stay with reputable manufacturers. Again, the new NIJ standards eliminated a lot of the manufacturers that were not, you know, big enough to carry the new testing and all. So that's helped out considerably as far as that goes. But you're absolutely right. You really need to, you know, protect it. You know, keep it cool and dry. You know, again, if it's cut, you need to get the thing checked out. That's my opinion. Again, they encapsulate these panels for a reason, because they want to keep out the sunlight and any other type of environment moisture that can get in there. And if there is an issue with that, then you need to make sure that you have it addressed, because it's you know, as important as this thing is, you know, it's you don't want to, you know, have negligence on your part either, you know, as the consumer. So, but yes, you're right. It's better to stay, I think, with the reputable manufacturers. And we've mentioned a couple tonight. There's others, but you know, you do a search for them, and you'll know exactly which one the big boys are.
So again, I mean, you work on the materials, the raw materials themselves, and the chemistry behind making those materials better, and you're not associated with any particular manufacturer,
right,
or distributor of the material. So you're kind of, which I think is good for us in our show, is, you know, uh-huh, one step removed from all that.
Right.
But
yeah, because I don't really have a play, you know, my company doesn't have we can't say, oh, this is the point blank is the best. I mean, you know, we can't make those claims.
Right.
You know, and if we did, it'd be sound like we'd do a commercial for them. So
yeah, because I have questions about fitting and sizing and stuff like that, but you know, you're not on that.
I'm not really. Yeah. I'm not the guy there on that.
Okay. Well, I did. But what you've provided us has been absolutely fascinating and enlightening, and really, I think, will help everybody get an insight into how the materials and how things are structured and how to take care of them to better protect you. You know, again, because this could protect you from several different types of attacks that you may come across. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm, with the prices coming down, they're not just for law enforcement. They're not just for professional security. Civilians can afford these now, and there are reasons for civilians to consider getting them.
No, exactly. Yeah, you never know. It's just like having a handgun or being properly prepared, you know, for a fight. You want to make sure that you can protect yourself. And obviously, I think in some states, you know, having vests, I don't know if there's some stipulations in different states, but if you can, you might want to look into it, you know?
Yeah, I've heard various things about, I mean, because I've heard from California, it's like, oh no, in California, if you have a vest, you're either law enforcement, and if you're not law enforcement, you're a bad guy, because only bad guys want vests to protect themselves against law enforcement. I've never heard that substantiated about California, but you're right. You need to check out your local
laws,
ordinances and laws, mm-hmm, and restrictions, things like that. You know, 5-6 years ago, people may have raised an eyebrow about why a completely normal average citizen may want some Kevlar body armor. Mm-hmm. These days, not so much.
No, no.
Times have changed.
Right. Especially as Mass is saying, for home use. I mean, you know, you're not taking it out. Why not? I mean, there's no difference in that and protecting yourself with, you know, as much wall or door as you can get, you know. And I happen to agree with his statements on, you know, well, I agree with just about everything Mass. Well, okay. If Mass is listening, I agree with 100% Mass. But you know, it can't hurt. And, you know, if it's something that could be in, you know, I guess within your monetary means, you know, it wouldn't hurt to have one, especially in home, you know. It'd be nice to be able to have something you could wear everywhere you go. But again, I don't know about the laws in every state. And, you know, of course, once again, the factor of being comfortable and all that. But again, at home, it's you know, as Mass says, it's can't hurt to have one right there, you know, under your bed or right there where you're fire. And that's, you know, the storage there is not bad either, because typically you're sleeping in a very comfortable atmosphere and, you know, it's right under your bed. So
yeah,
couldn't be better than that.
And I think you look at the prices. The prices mm-hmm. for a vest are equivalent to a taser or a mid-range handgun.
Well, there you go.
So, you know, instead of getting another handgun or a second taser, maybe you would want to consider getting a little bit of body armor.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Mass recommends every designated home defender should have body armor.
Mm.
So if you and your wife are the designated person, people to defend the house, you each need to get your own set. Teenage son or daughter, they need their set.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's part of understanding what's available to you and taking advantage of those opportunities and the stuff that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
Doc, thanks again for coming and sharing this with us. And
oh, you bet.
You know, explaining a very good technical detail of what it is and why it works and some of the, again, vulnerabilities of it and how we need to take care of it.
Yeah, you bet. You bet. Well, I hope I've not been too dumbed down or too
high. No, I think you hit it right on the head.
It can be, you know, and you talk about it all day long. And, you know, a couple times I've said some things and it's like, what? And it's only because I guess I'm just used to talking about it. But you bet. No problem. I appreciate you having me on. And I really enjoyed it because, you know, it's really a nice science behind it. And it's a real success story because it's a science that actually works and you can see it work. I mean, it's something that you can get your hands on. So,
and it saves lives.
Sure does. Very important. That's the most important thing. So, yeah. But thanks again for having me on, Alex.
And Doc, where can they reach you?
Yeah, you can check out the Gun Nation podcast at gunnation.us. That's gunnation.us. And again, I'm on the Gun Rights Radio Network. Also do the Barstool Discussion, as Alex mentioned, with Mark Vandenberg, and who is the purveyor of all things gun rights over at the Gun Rights Radio Network. You can get there at gunrightsradio.com, which my good friend here, Mr. Alex Haddix, is also a member of. And we have a lot of good podcasts over there, so I've got a little bit of something for everybody, I think. But everybody likes your show, Alex.
You're not pandering to me at all.
Yeah.
And I love it. So, yeah, thanks again, Doc. I really appreciate your time.
You bet.
And this is a perfect example of the depth of knowledge that people can get at the Gun Rights Radio Network. It's not just all about guns. It's about safety, protection, and everyone is really willing to share.
Very much so. Very much so. Thanks again, Alex.
All right. Thanks, Doc.
Gun Rights Radio Network has the best pro Second Amendment, pro gun rights podcast available on the net. The podcasts are absolutely free when subscribing using iTunes or Zoom Marketplace. Or if you want, you can just listen from the website. Make sure you visit gunrightsradio.com to subscribe. Podcasting freedom, one episode at a time.
Welcome back. Thanks again to Doc for coming on the show. You can hear more from Doc on the Gun Nation podcast and the GRRN Barstool Discussions. There are links in the show notes. That will do it for this week. As always, you can follow my daily tips on Twitter, Facebook, and Google+. On Twitter, I'm Practical Def, and Facebook is Practical Defense. I also invite you to check out my book on practical home security. It is currently available in DeadTree, Kindle, Nook, and iTunes editions. Autographed copies are available on my website. The URL is alexhaddix.com/book. If you have any tips you'd like to share with everyone, a comment on a show, or if you would like to suggest a topic for an upcoming episode, write into podcast@alexhaddix.com. You can also leave us a voicemail on the new Practical Defense tip or comment line at 805-203-6586. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe.
Lady Antebellum.
Before every show, we practice. Gotta be prepared.
Exactly. And the American Red Cross wants us to be prepared, too. Prepared for disaster. This
world. Just take 3 steps to be Red Cross ready. Create a disaster supplies kit with water, food, and a first aid kit. Make a family communication plan and listen to local radio and TV reports to stay informed.
It's that simple. To learn more, visit redcross.org or contact your local Red Cross chapter today. Thank you so much.
Practical Defense is a member of the Gun Rights Radio Network at gunrightsradio.com. And that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense Podcast. For questions, commentary, tips, or topic suggestions, send us an email at podcast@alexhaddix.com. That's podcast@alexhaddix.com. Or leave us a voicemail at 805-203-6586. I look forward to hearing from you.
Music by Kevin MacLeod.
You can now hear Gun Rights Radio Network while you're on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. On-demand news, talk, and more on your mobile phone. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, and no memory or storage wasted. Available for your iPhone, Android phones, or your BlackBerry. Downloading is easy. Go to Stitcher.com or check out your app store. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Gun Rights Radio Network shows can be found under Sources.